Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. There are some days where we really test that commitment. Today is one of those days. We're going to open the show in a moment talking about this panel in Seattle. Apparently, there was a panel convened to reflect on the Seattle Police Department's response to the 2020 riots following the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And the panel has concluded that the Seattle Police Department needs to apologize to protesters for its reaction to them in the summer of 2020. As you can imagine, I have a lot of things to say, a lot of confusion in my mind about what exactly police are apologizing for. Also coming up on Tax Day, which was yesterday, Governor Jay Inslee made a woman pander for her own money and grovel at him for her own money. I watched that video last night on Instagram, and my first thought was, wow, I'm following Jay Inslee on Instagram. I should probably change that so I never see a video like this ever again. Also, I'll talk about a new law in Seattle that is going to worsen the housing crisis. And it is under the guise of helping renters, something that has been a mission of council members like Socialist Shamus Awand for years. They've passed a lot of efforts to help renters to the detriment of landlords who are absolutely fleeing the city. And you're concerned about the housing crisis? That makes no sense to me. Also, later on in the show, Trump NFTs take two. I'll give you a preview of what I'm going to say about this. Please don't buy them. Please don't waste your money on them. In fact, I have a workaround where you can own one of those glorious pieces of art without spending your hard-earned money on them. But first, Nicole, hello. How are you?
Brandi.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. It's a little bit nicer today. How are you? I know that you had a long night.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that momentarily.
Bright and bubbly for having such a long night.
I've had it, yeah, and I wasn't feeling good yesterday. I didn't say it on the show, but I am feeling better today. I've had six concussions, and so a couple times a year, I have days where my word recall is not good. And you might notice it sometimes on the live show, because since we're live, I can't hide it and be like, wow, that was terrible. So yesterday, right before the show, I was just feeling weird and my word recall was bad. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be wonderful. And then we taped a segment for our Sunday show that was on a very like intellectual topic that I'm not just naturally very informed about. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a disaster because
I just powered right through.
Couldn't think good. Feeling better today, talking better today.
Those concussions, man.
Growing up poor, coming up with your own fun.
Got to wear helmets.
We used to play Frisbee on the roof. Kids these days, they don't know how to make their own fun.
They don't do anything fun like that. Yesterday we were walking to lunch and we started crossing the road right before the light turned.
Nicole, don't tell people that.
Green for us to cross. I mean, seconds. And us starting that walk across made these kids on the other side say, like, all nervous and say, one said to the other, I don't want to cross before the light turns.
Man, we're a bad influence.
Totally.
With our jaywalking.
You know, poor
it was
kids.
Cold out.
Come on, live a little.
Poor kids. Okay. Wow. Today is going to be one of those days because I realize things in Seattle are ridiculous, but then there are just some stories that really underscore that. I encourage you to go read in full the article I'm about to talk about. Let me read the headline for you. It's an article from the Seattle Times, but all the other media outlets in town are covering this today. It's also national news, which I understand. The article reads, SPD should apologize for violence against Black Lives Matter protesters, panel says. Let that sink in for a moment. This is about the summer of love, the summer of 2020 in Seattle. And there was this panel convened of, you know, community activists. There were apparently some police officers and commanders on it and other folks getting together to decide, was the SPD response appropriate? And if not, what should the result be? And we are, of course, almost 3 years down the road from the summer of 2020 and everything that happened in the summer of 2020. But this panel concludes that officers should offer a, quote, sincere public apology for, and this is the Seattle Times. For the love of God, the Seattle Times hates cops, genuinely hates cops, And Mike Carter of the Seattle Times hates cops. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I just don't know any other way to describe his writing on policing issues, yet this is his beat. The opening paragraph says, the Seattle Police Department should offer a sincere public apology for its violent response. That's not in quotes. That's like how he wrote mm-hmm. this. For its violent response to Black Lives Matter protests that brought thousands of demonstrators to city streets in the summer of 2020, a panel of police, citizens, and accountability experts has concluded.
Important to show this picture again and talk about the picture because the picture they use
hands
is
up.
Two men with hands up in front of cops coming at them, I guess, is what they're supposed to imply.
Spraying them.
So that's quite the picture to use to demonstrate what was happening in the Summer of Love.
Our hands are up. And I'm going to get into more of this in a moment, but just the gist of this article, and I encourage you to go read it. But essentially, they said that SPD should also acknowledge the longstanding trauma and fear many may have of police as a result of institutional SPD racism and discrimination. So there's this idea that the Seattle Police Department should have, I don't know, handled the situation with more kid gloves, knowing that so many in the crowd suffer from deep-seated trauma against the police. But I will say, now, before I get to some of my confusion around what exactly police are supposed to apologize for, one of the things this panel wants is for police to do a better job of distinguishing the violent protester rioters from the peaceful demonstrators. And I can tell you for more than a decade covering demonstrations in Seattle, that is oftentimes very, very difficult to do. You go back to all the May Day protests and riots that happened, and you'd have 10,000 peaceful marchers on the streets that SPD was trying to help navigate through the city. And then in those ranks, you'd have Antifa, Black Bloc, who'd infiltrate, jump out, commit crimes, commit vandalism. How do you, in the moment, try to deal with, oh, here's a crowd of 1,000 people. We've got 10 people using them as cover in the middle to commit violent crimes. And there's this belief that it should be easy to just wiggle your way through there and just snatch them out and arrest them. Having covered it, I have been pushed in the stomach by a police baton. I've been pepper sprayed God knows how many times. I have had their flashbang grenades fall at my feet. I've been nearly deafened by them. And all of it, I never thought for one moment, how dare those police officers not realize that I'm in this group as a member of the press. I'm sorry, but if you've put yourself in a group where violent acts are occurring and they're using pepper spray, for instance, the pepper spray isn't going to navigate through the air and say, oh, you're peaceful, you're not, you're peaceful, you're not. If you're in a group where there are acts of violence occurring and you don't want to be a part of it, get out of the group. Get out of the group and go home. Encourage the people committing acts of violence and vandalism to go home. But you don't get to stay in what has become a riot and expect that you're not going to be impacted at all by the pepper spray that's put out in the air, by the munitions that the police department is throwing out there. As a journalist, I didn't expect to be completely unharmed by those things because I put myself in the middle of it. Now, let's get to this idea of an apology because, again, I guess I'm a little confused as to what happened in the summer of 2020 that police are the ones who should be apologizing for. Is it the fact that their police cruisers were lit on fire in the middle of downtown? Is that what police should be apologizing for? Is it the fact their own rifles were stolen out of the backs of those police cruisers before they were lit on fire? Is that what police should be apologizing for? Should police be apologizing for the widespread looting that happened downtown? You tell me if this is something police should be apologizing for. Businesses vandalized, looted to the studs. Is this what police ought to be apologizing for? Because I guess I'm a little bit confused. How about the severe vandalism of businesses like Starbucks? That not only had all their windows broken in, but people went inside and lit things on fire. Is that what police should be apologizing for? I guess I'm confused. What about the construction trailers that were lit on fire outside the youth jail? Is that what police should be apologizing for? What about the East Police Precinct being lit on fire after the door was cemented shut with officers inside? Is that what police officers need to apologize for? Did they attack themselves? Did they light their own police precinct on fire? What about the dozens and dozens of officers who were injured responding to riots in the summer of 2020. The officers who were hospitalized as a result of those injuries, is that what they need to apologize for? Is it the police department who needs to apologize for the journalists who were targeted and assaulted and mobbed? Should they be apologizing to me, the police, for the fact that our crew was mobbed on night one of CHOP and had to seek refuge in a fire station? Of course police shouldn't apologize for those things because police aren't responsible for any of those things. So let's make a deal. Police can offer an apology to any peaceful protesters, truly peaceful protesters, who might have got caught up in their response in the summer of 2020. But how about police issue an apology only after the rioters issue an apology? How about police issue an apology after every single person who looted stores downtown apologizes? After every single person who vandalized businesses downtown apologizes? After every single person who broke windows, who spray painted, apologizes? After every person who lit a police car on fire apologizes? After every person who stole a police rifle apologizes? After every rioter who was involved in assaults on the free press apologizes? How about police apologize after every rioter who injured a police officer during the summer of 2020 apologizes? If I were the Seattle Police Department and I got this request to apologize, if I were Chief Adrian Diaz, if he has the cojones, I would give him a big middle finger. And I would tell them, we'll apologize once the rioters apologize. And the idea that the press is going along with this, that the Seattle Times writes this lengthy article explaining all the reasons why police should apologize for the summer of 2020, makes me sick to my stomach. Still waiting for my apology. Do you think I'll ever get an apology from the mob? I'm asking you, Nicole.
Sincerely, no.
I don't think you'll get an apology. You know what's interesting? One of them did. I got an email from a woman, young woman who says that she was in the mob.
Right.
And then felt bad after the fact and emailed me saying so. I thought it was very sweet.
Wow.
And then at the time I was at Fox and I was hosting The Divide and I thought, well, why don't you come on? We'll talk about it. And she never agreed to come on. But I did think, oh, wow. I wish you had done something in the moment to tell your comrades not to harass us for a half hour. But I appreciated. Yeah. So I got a singular apology.
One apology. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like more, though.
Little win.
Little tiny wins. Mm-hmm. Yeah, SPD apologized for 2020. If I was in charge of SPD, not on your freaking life. Okay, moving on. Did you know it was tax day yesterday? Did you get your taxes done, Nicole?
Oh, right in the nick of time.
Oh, man. It's hard working for yourself because you look at that bill and you're like,
I know.
It's hard.
I know. When I got refunds, I'd file them early.
Oh, yeah. You get that stuff done. What's the first day you can file for a refund? Like January, mid-January, yep. Once you get all your documents in the mail? Oh, yeah. You do that immediately.
Yep.
When you owe taxes, it's like, April.
I'll put that off.
April 17th this year sounds like a good day
collect
to
on
file
that interest
taxes.
Along a little longer.
Yeah. Jay Inslee was out and about on tax day. A governor who, if you recall, when he first ran for office 3 terms ago, pledged never to raise taxes. And of course, he has not lived up to that pledge, as you know. Jay Inslee was at this event and he was talking about the working class tax rebate that Washington put into effect. Essentially, it's the Washington Working Families Tax Credit. It's an annual tax credit for residents who are low to moderate income. It includes people who are not documented. And you can get anywhere from $50 to $1,200 for a tax credit, depending on things like the size of your family and your income level. So anyway, he's at this event and the state and the media have been encouraging families like, oh, sign up for the Working Families Tax Credit. Make sure that you're taking advantage of it. And look, I don't know who this woman is. I don't know if she was sincerely there, if she was a plant. But anyway, Governor Jay Inslee does this Instagram video talking to this woman who says that she's benefiting from the working families tax credit. And to me, well, I'll talk about my opinion of this when it came over my Instagram timeline, but I'll let you listen to it first.
on tax day. We've given millions of dollars of effective tax cuts to people. Jill, what does this mean for you?
The working families tax credit really helps my family in knowing that we're going to be able to easily afford food this month. Everyone knows that food prices have gone up, rent's gone up. If I'm not getting the jobs, we kind of, you know, get a little nervous because that's a hit on our food. And so that's going to be a month that, you know, that's the month that I don't have to worry if I get sick and I can't take a job, then we're going to be okay.
You are exactly what we had in mind when we passed this. Keep up the great work. We care about you. We're glad your family's
Thank you better. So much.
Thank you so much. What I see is a woman groveling before a man to keep more of her own money. That's what I see. And again, no offense to this woman. I don't like to hear any person saying that they're working, but they're having a hard time affording the essentials like gas and groceries. But you're standing in front of a man who is responsible for taxing you to death, for taxing you out of the ability to be able to pay for those basic essentials. And now he's standing in front of you saying, we're going to give you just a modest amount of that back as a tax credit. And you're grateful to him? How about he takes less of your money to begin with so that you don't need a working family's tax credit? When you talk about the cost of groceries, the cost of fuel, who's responsible for that? In large part, Democrats and Democratic policies. And so I get it that you're grateful when you get to pay less at tax time or you get more money back at tax time, but don't forget that your taxes don't have to be that high in the first place. The cost of goods don't have to be that high in the first place. The cost of gasoline doesn't have to be that high in the first place. It is skyrocketing in Washington state right now because Governor Jay Inslee's carbon tax. It's something we're going to talk about on the Sunday show with subscribers this week. So I would really hesitate groveling in front of a man who is costing you and your family more money every single month just because he's going to throw you a couple pennies back at the end of the year. So yeah, I got to unfollow Jay Inslee on Instagram because I cannot tolerate seeing another video like that. I'm trying to watch dog videos, okay? I'm just scrolling, ugh. Dog videos. You know, you get in the scroll and then Jay Inslee. It's like, absolutely not. So we were talking about how I was tired today because I sucked it up. I did Fox News again at 1 a.m., 4 a.m. Eastern time. And we talked on the show earlier this week. Was it early? This week or last week?
I think it was last week. I think it's funny because after the show yesterday, you were very hesitant to tell me about it.
Well, because I do Fox and Friends first, which is like their early show that comes on even before Fox and Friends. Last week had asked me to come on, if you didn't hear about it, and they asked me to come on and talk about the excess compensation tax in Washington. So the tax that targets hospital executives that they believe are paid excess compensation. And I was like, okay, it's at 1 a.m., but I'll suck it up because I really want to talk about this tax. Mm-hmm. And then right before my hit, they changed the subject to Hunter Biden's business dealings. And I was like, oh my God, we didn't even talk about the tax. So I got on the show and I was like, should I have canceled on them? And a lot of you said no, like you did the right thing. You know, you didn't cancel on them at the last minute. But I kind of told Nicole, I'll never do that show again.
Like, kind of. You I did, said, I will not do that show
I will
again.
Not do that show again. Well, then, I mean, fool me once. And I was like, then I got the same person reached out to me and said, hey, will you do the show again with us? And it's like their lead segment that I now realize is meant to be more of a kind of round robin thing. Mm-hmm. And they lured me in again by saying, we want you to talk about Senate Bill 5599.
Local.
Which is my baby. And by my baby, I mean, I want to destroy it.
Right.
And I was like, again, okay. So this is what they did last time. They're like, let's get Brandy on to talk about something she cares about. And then we'll switch at the last minute. But I'm like, you know what? I'll give them one last chance. Because I want to talk about government-sanctioned kidnapping of kids. It's one of the bills I'm most passionate about bringing attention to this legislative session. So I was like, okay, if we're going to be able to get more national attention towards Senate Bill 5599.
And the show.
We're trying to build a business here.
That's right.
I was like, okay, I'll suck it up and wake up at, you know, 12:30 a.m. to do this. And I was just waiting when I woke up to see an email from them saying, oh, we've totally changed the topics. And it didn't. They did add some additional topics. Mm-hmm. They said, we're going to talk about Elon Musk's interview with Tucker and artificial intelligence, which that's fine. Love that topic. What was the second topic we talked about? So yeah, it was so early in the morning, I already forgot. Oh, it was Biden and Harris and their tax returns and how much money they've made, which honestly, I don't think they've made all that much money comparatively to what presidents have made in previous years. So fine, I can talk about that. I can talk about, you know, working class families. And then they did allow me to talk about Senate Bill 5599. Here's just a little clip of my appearance at 1 a.m. I do this for you. I do this for you. 1 a.m. Pacific time on Fox and Friends First.
Yeah, when this bill came up at the beginning of this legislative session, I said on my show that I thought it was the most dangerous bill that I'd seen in about 12 years covering politics in this state. And I said at the time, I think it should be national news. I think every single news network should be talking about it. And look, there's two issues at play here. One of them is parental rights. Every single parent, regardless of politics or ideology, regardless of how they feel about transgender issues, every single parent, this should freak them out, because it doesn't make you a bad parent. It doesn't make you an abusive parent to want to know where your child is at night and to want to have a say in what kind of medical care that your child is getting. And this bill would strip parents of that right. It is essentially government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. And what it does in Washington state is it makes physical abuse in the home akin to a parent who might have concerns about their child getting gender-affirming care. It essentially puts those two things on the same tier, and it says that if your child decides to go to a youth shelter and they show up and they say, I'm here for protected health care, then that youth shelter can hide your child's location from you while they pursue that health care that's already protected under Washington state law for kids over the age of 13. Imagine being a parent. Imagine being a loving parent who just wants, yeah, they want to say in what kind of medical care their kids are doing. They have some concerns about gender care and gender identity. And you wake up in the morning and your child's not there. And no one is telling you that your child is at a shelter. No one's telling you where your child is. It is unbelievable to me that this is even something that one was introduced in the first place, but that is actually on the cusp of passing.
And it's not just in Washington state. We have seen things like this normalized in so many other states. And it is so concerning because as a parent, you do have parental rights. The fact that the government in so many instances is trying to take that away from parents is frightening. Good on you for calling it out. Thank you, as always, for getting up with us. Brandi Crews, we appreciate it.
All right, so Fox and Friends First is back in my good graces. And then, you know, like, this is how much I care. 1 a.m., sleep, who needs it? We're fighting for the people of Washington, okay? But I did say when the bill came out, this should be national news. So that's why I'm like, can I really say, even though these people burned me last week, can I really say no when I think this bill should be national news? And it's starting to get picked up a little bit more.
And you spend the night here. People should know you spend the night here just so you can do this, sleeping on our little couch.
You know, I care.
It's true dedication. What am I gonna say? When you didn't feel good either.
You know, not all heroes wear capes. Super humble today. Yeah, but no, that was nice to be able to talk about that.
Yeah, when this bill came up at the beginning of this legislative session.
I just wanted to play it again.
Wants to play it again.
It's a little technical thing we have to get past
there. That's all right. That's okay. So yeah, I did that at 1 a.m. Super tired, but it is a bill that everyone should be paying attention to. So, you know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for the first time that Hunter Biden's business dealings took precedent over my local tax I want to raise awareness for, but went on Fox last night. So there it is. All right. One of our great sponsors on the podcast, sellwithwes.com, Wes Jones and Associates. I have a great social media video I'm going to put out with Wes that is about him asking me to guess the top five states where people are selling their homes and moving to. And I couldn't.
I was doing much better at it off camera.
You were doing much better. Okay, I'll ask you guys in the comments to guess the top five states that Wes Jones says his clients are selling their house to move to. I'll put the social video out, but I want to see which of you, before I do that, in the comments can guess the top five states that people are moving to. Anyway, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe to move out of state or maybe just to move further away from Seattle, Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com. They have a great marketing strategy where they list your home locally, internationally to get more eyeballs on it. They have better listing prep, better showings, better negotiation strategies to get rid of some of those pesky buyer contingencies. And Wes Jones is just an awesome guy. So again, lock in your answers for Wes Jones's clients where they're moving to, because we'll use that for a future segment. But visit sellwithwest.com. That's sellwithwest.com. If you're curious about, you know, can I afford to wait? How's the market looking right now? It's been up and down, up and down. Visit sellwithwest.com. Reach out to him. Ask him questions about whether it's the right time. He does see a window of opportunity right now, or whether you can afford to hang on just a little bit longer. All right. Landlords have been completely under attack in Washington State and Seattle in particular, which is interesting to me, some of the policies that have been pushed, because you know, you hear Democrats complaining about housing crisis, housing crisis, housing crisis, and I don't think they realize that attacking landlords is not going to help in the housing crisis. So I want to talk about a new policy passed by the city of Seattle in our segment, Unbelievable. So Washington State, like I said, there have been, I would say it's not a friendly state and environment for landlords. On the contrary, Seattle in particular has tried to make it a very friendly environment for renters. And look, I, you know, certainly don't want, do I think that there are crappy landlords out there? Of course. Do I think there are landlords who take advantage of their tenants, who, you know, bury them with fees when someone is just having a hard time? Of course I do. But I really think that accounts for just a small, small fraction of the landlords out there. And it's been a difficult couple years. As much as it has been for renters in the pandemic and people who were put out of work, there was this really real inability to acknowledge that it was also hard for landlords. You know, when you had an eviction moratorium and you had people who might have legitimately needed that, but you also had people who just took advantage of it. People who could afford to pay their rent because they were still working, never lost their job, or they were getting lucrative unemployment benefits from the state, who just as easily, there was no burden of proof to say, hey, do you need to not pay your rent right now? No, it's like anybody could take advantage of the eviction moratorium. So you had landlords, some of them mom and pop landlords who might just have one or two units, who weren't getting paid for years on end. And it was insane, the disregard for their financial well-being while caring so much about the financial well-being of renters. And in the city of Seattle, there were several laws that were passed during that period of time, a lot of them pushed by socialist city councilwoman Shama Sawant. There were just some of the laws that were passed during that period of time, requiring landlords to provide tenants with 6 months' notice of a rent increase. Low-income tenants facing evictions had a right to an attorney in Seattle. There was also another one that says landlords have to help financially low-income tenants with relocation fees if they have to leave because of a rent increase of more than 10%. There was a bill that Sawant sponsored that capped the move-in fee for that landlords can charge renters, so you can't be charged as much to actually move in and get into an apartment, et cetera, et cetera. But now, on the unbelievable front, there is the latest policy approved by the city of Seattle. KNKX wrote about it in an article. The headline, Seattle City Council approves cap for late rent fees at $10 a month. So the most that a landlord can charge you if you have paid your rent late is $10 a month. What is the incentive to pay on time? I mean, I suppose you could have some hit. How does that affect your credit history?
I think you have to be a certain number of days.
A certain number of days late.
Right.
And so if you're just like, hey, you know, and I've been there. When I moved into Seattle, I have many times been concerned about whether I had enough money in my bank account to make rent. And I've had paid my rent late on multiple occasions when I had my first job in Seattle making virtually nothing. And so I get it. I've been there. But when you take this in combination with all the other pro-renter policies in the city of Seattle that are explicitly anti-landlord, because again, they want to paint landlords as these big, bad, scary entities. And do I believe they're big corporations? Of course. But there are a lot of people who are maybe renting a home that they're not living in anymore. And during the pandemic, we heard from a ton of these landlords who are like, why? I'm going to sell this house. I'm not going to have this house available to rent anymore. I'm going to sell it and I'm going to move out and I'm just going to not be a landlord in Seattle anymore. So when we talk about the housing crisis and the desire to fix the housing crisis, and how this is like the underlying, the problem that belies every other issue we have in the city of Seattle. And then you are passing policies that will scare landlords out of the city, that will stop people from offering apartments to rent, that will stop people from offering homes that families can be able to rent. How do you believe that this is going to fix the housing crisis? Now, they would say, well, this, capping the late fee for renters will stop people from ending up on the streets. And look, do I think there might be a couple instances where someone might fall out of an apartment onto the street? Sure. I think that's very, very rare. And there are a lot of social safety nets in place to stop that from happening when it's an emergency. When if the city doesn't step in, and this person can't pay their rent this month, they're going to become homeless. There are a lot of existing programs to help those individuals who are truly living on the cusp. But I'm warning the city of Seattle, and I don't think they're going to heed any of these warnings because they haven't for the past 3 years, that if you continue in this direction, vilifying landlords, making it difficult for landlords to run a business, to rent a home, to rent an apartment, landlords are going to continue to leave the city, and then you will have a true housing crisis on your hands that we will not be able to recover from. The fact that you don't realize that yet is truly unbelievable. All right, methodworks.com. If you have not taken advantage of the offer that our awesome sponsor, MethodWorks Consulting, is giving to Undivided viewers and listeners, listen up, because it's a good one. If you run a small business, maybe you run a podcast. Can we call ours a mom and pop podcast? It's just me and you and Daryl.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
I think we qualify.
If you've got 5 employees, 50 employees, I'm sure that tech issues are kind of the furthest thing from what you're thinking about right now. They were for me. When I started my business, it was like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed by taxes and trying to figure out payroll and all these other issues that you have to do to run a business. And you just start focused on growing your business and running your business and not all the weird behind the scenes stuff. But what I learned early on is sometimes you just have to suck it up and hand those things over to people. And tech is a big one. And one of the things that Mark Harmsworth, who owns MethodWorks, told me is there's a lot of small businesses who don't realize how much peril they're in if they do not have something in place to protect their data, to protect themselves from a data breach, their customers' data, because one breach can wipe out a small business and that's it for you. And so it is something that you have to think about. So again, methodworks.com, if you visit them and tell them you heard about them on the Undivided podcast, they're giving 1 month of free security monitoring, completely free. And they're doing a free security review just to assess sort of your needs. So really, there's no commitment there. Just if you're thinking that's something that you might be interested in as a small to mid-sized business, visit methodworks.com, let them know you heard about them at the Undivided podcast, and then get that free security review, 1 month of free security monitoring. Great deals for Undivided viewers and listeners. Love it. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State just momentarily. There is a bill that obviously the Republican-controlled House is pushing. Now, I hesitate to even talk about these things sometimes because it's never going to make it through the Senate. You know, Democrats are never going to get on board with it, so it's not going to make it to the president's desk. But I think it's interesting, first of all, the transgender athlete debate is a worthy debate to have. And I don't think the mainstream media is willing to engage in it in a productive way. I mean, they kind of steer clear of it because it's just too controversial. And that's a bummer because we need to be having these conversations. And it seems to be only a couple media outlets and independent media outlets that are willing to even dive into the conversation. So HR 734 is a Republican proposal that would essentially say across the board when it comes to athletics in public schools and universities that they cannot permit a person whose sex is male to participate in an athletic program or activity that is designated for women or girls. It goes on to say, for the purposes of this subsection, sex shall be recognized based solely on a person's reproductive biology and genetics at birth. So again, Republicans like it, no chance in hell in the Senate of going anywhere. That being said, I thought it was really interesting that the executive office of the president, the Office of Management and Budget, you know, preemptively put out a statement saying that if the president were presented with H.R. 734, he would veto it. I'll read you just a couple lines from this statement that was put out. Again, proactively, they put this out on April 17th. At a time when transgender youth already face a nationwide mental health crisis, with half of transgender youth in a recent survey saying they have seriously considered suicide, A national law that further stigmatizes these children is completely unnecessary, hurts families and students, and would only put students at greater risk. Discrimination has no place in our nation's schools or on our playing fields. So it's very clear that even though this is something Republicans want to raise as an issue, even though it's something that they're putting in this bill, not only is it not going to go anywhere in the Senate, but the President of the United States would never sign anything like that. And look, I don't know that I support a nationwide bill to sort of codify that. I do think that we have to somehow get to a place where we figure out how are you going to incorporate transgender athletes in competitive play. Bear with me here. You know, we talked about the Boston Marathon and how they created a specific category for gender non-binary runners. And I wonder, would there be any merit to just creating a category where people can enter it if they want to that includes transgender swimmers or transgender, basketball? I mean, you wouldn't be able to build a team based off people who would want to participate in that category. So I guess it would only be relevant if you're talking about single athlete sports where they compete as an individual. And I don't know if I 100% know the answer to this, but I do know that the answer is not allowing a biological male to compete against a biological female. That just doesn't make any sense. And that's what this particular bill, H.R. 734, is trying to show, that, hey, that doesn't make any sense. And so we have to find a better way. And it's become this huge, you know, topic of debate. It's one of these heated social topics. And rightfully so. I just wish the mainstream media would engage with it in a way that was productive, as opposed to just completely ignoring it. Like, oh, that's not a worthy conversation at all. Because I don't think that's very healthy either. And I think it leads to some of the more hateful and vitriolic debates really being the ones that are getting the most attention on this particular issue, where if we had mainstream media, you know, reasonable politicians, reasonable political commentators getting together and saying, hey, let's have this debate. Let's have it in a healthy, productive way. Let's have it in a kind way. But let's get to the bottom of what the right policy is right here, right now. And I just don't think that until the mainstream media is capable of doing that, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. All right. One more thing outside of Washington State, although it impacts us here, and I will continue to beat that drum on the border crisis being a direct cause of deaths on our streets from drugs. I don't know why there's this, I do know why, it's politics. There's this continued disconnect and inability to acknowledge it. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has been testifying in front of hearings at the whim of Republicans who want him there. And he said something that is absolutely unreal. I just cannot believe that he can utter these words with a straight face and that his entire team of Border Patrol agents don't just resign en masse. Listen.
It is my testimony that the border is secure and we are working every day and night, to increase its security. The challenges that we are experiencing at the border cannot be overstated.
It is my testimony that the border is secure. It just, it undermines common sense. I mean, we've had my friend Ali Bradley on, who's now doing tremendous work for News Nation at the border. I've seen Bill Malugin at Fox News, another awesome border correspondent, and the images that they bring to us of thousands of migrants pouring over the Rio Grande, being smuggled into the country. And you have the head of border security saying our border is secure. Again, is he clinging to his job that hopelessly? Because he serves at the pleasure of the president, right? And whenever you have someone who's serving at the pleasure of a politician, I understand that they might want to ingratiate themselves to that politician and that politician's talking point so they can keep their job. But if he is a true law enforcement professional who values the men and women who are working under him, putting their lives on the line every single day, then he ought to have the bravery to say what is true, to ask Congress for help in a public setting, to tell Congress, here's what we need to improve the situation at the border. And if he gets fired as a result, he should be okay with that because he should have a backbone and he should be willing to stand up for not only the men and women of the Border Patrol, but the communities along the border that are suffering, communities like ours that are suffering as a result of drugs being smuggled into our country through not only unsecured parts of the border, but through ports of entry because there simply isn't enough resources to catch everything. Absolutely ridiculous that he would be in front of Congress and say, "It's my testimony today that the border is secure," when every image, every video we see on TV with our own eyes says otherwise. All right, one more story outside of Washington. I thought this one might be fun. There is a picture posted on Twitter of a flag flying in a driveway in Utah. Nicole, wrong answers only. This is my mission to you guys. Before Nicole and I give our guesses as to what the flag is, for those listening on the podcast, it's like it's got all the colors of the rainbow. So you'd think maybe, okay, pride flag. But then it's got like colors of the, I think it's the transgender awareness flag, like in the shape of a mountain. And then it's got something that looks like a rainbow beehive in the middle of it. And nobody on Twitter seems to know what this flag represents. So I thought it might be challenging to send you on the mission of tell me what this, someone find out what this flag is for. I think it's celebrating gay bees.
Or transgender.
Or transgender bees.
Right.
Bees that identify as the queen that aren't the queen.
Maybe bees that live in Colorado. Or wait, Utah?
This is Utah.
Bees that live in Utah and are
under
gay.
The rainbow.
Yes. Oh, or under the rainbow.
Or
on a rainy day.
It is celebrating LGBTQ plus Eskimos. Could that be an igloo? Could that be an igloo? I feel really bad for people who are only listening on the podcast, which is why you didn't watch the show. I tried to describe the flag as best I could. So we're going to get to the comment section of our show. So I don't know what you get, but I'll reward the person with attention who can find out what the hell that flag actually means. I think it's celebrating gay bees or LGBTQ plus beekeepers. That might be it.
There you go.
That might that be it. Live in a Utah. Very specific flag.
I think you have to be specific about Utah.
Because in Utah.
I think the, I think the mountains represent Utah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get to the comment section. And I have so much faith in you guys. I really think by the time we get to comments and questions on the show today that you're going to have an answer for me.
It's coming up quick. So get your comment in quick.
EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. One of our dedicated sponsors to the show. And why wouldn't they be? Look at me. I look great. Again, the humility just coming out yeah, of the podcast today. I have talked about it and pushed this weight loss plan onto you because I lost more than 30 pounds in just 60 days. I started the program in November. By January, I was like, wow, I'm feeling great. Almost down to my pre-pandemic weight. It's coming off a little more slowly now, but that's to be expected. My body was just hanging on to weight that it wasn't used to hanging on to. But I've heard from several of you who started the program around the time we first started advertising with them and who are seeing great results, which I love. So if you're interested, you can get just a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. You just go on. There's a link to a little calendar. You just schedule a free 15-minute consultation. And Dr. Ryan Coogan will tell you if the program is right for you. A couple of the things I like about it: I don't have to go into an office to get weighed. Who wants to get weighed in front of someone else? I got a handy little app on the phone in case I'm running into trouble, running into issues following the plan, and they can give me assistance. And also, it's just real food. So you don't have to worry about buying prepackaged meals and then trying to maintain weight loss by what, eating prepackaged meals the rest of your life? That's ridiculous. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Also, for a final day on the podcast, we did a little promo swap with our friends over at the Based Politics podcast. Brad Palumbo, one of the co-hosts, reached out to me and said, "Hey, do you guys want to do a promo for us? We'll do a promo for you," which is awesome because I think there's a lot in common between our two shows, which is a complete rejection of party politics and just really trying to look at things through the lens of common sense, regardless of what party is behind it. So let me tell you a little bit about the Based Politics podcast. They have new episodes every Wednesday, co-hosted by Brad Palumbo and Hannah Cox. They dive into the big stories of the week, also what's trending online, viral moments you might have missed. They do it, and they have a lot of fun. And it's kind of, their view is classically liberal or libertarian perspective on the issues. So if you'd like to join their growing podcast community, check out the Based Politics podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and let me know if their show is one that you like. Okay, Nicole, I'm ready for questions and comments. I'm hoping that at the end of this, we'll have an answer as to what the heck that flag was in Utah. My guess still stands that it is a flag celebrating LGBTQ plus beekeepers in Utah. On the SPD should apologize for its response to the 2020 riots, Robert said on Facebook, if the cops should be apologizing for anything, it's not protecting those businesses and the innocent that were attacked while they retreated. And that's a good point. If SPD is going to apologize for anything, it should be giving up the East Police Precinct so easily. That's what I want an apology on. And I don't know if they've already kind of done a mea culpa on perhaps we shouldn't have, I don't know, given six square blocks of the city over to rioters just at their will to appease people. So yeah, that is a good point. Maybe SPD does have some things to apologize for, but not what this panel of experts and community members wants them to apologize for. Matthew says, my response to the police panel, to quote Jack Nicholson from As Good As It Gets, sell crazy somewhere else. We're all stocked up here. Brenda says, there must be a stupidity university because that Seattle City Council is out of their mind to think the police department owes them anything to include an apology. And I should note, it's not the city council. It's like this panel of citizens and activists. And there were some police members on there who, did the police officers on the panel really say we should apologize for the hurt that we caused? Because that would concern me. Brenda went on to say that should be the candle on the cake with the lid up. Every police officer should just take the patrol cars and just drive out of Seattle and find themselves another police department. I figure since the citizens of Seattle can see all the police cars leaving their community, maybe they'll get a clue in regard to how ungrateful they are and how important law enforcement are for them. I was surprised I even had any words even to post on this thing because of the stupidity. And that's the thing. You're down 500 officers, a third of your force, which really started in earnest in the summer of 2020 when you were talking about defunding them. And who wouldn't leave a job if your boss was saying we're going to defund your positions, and now you want the officers who are left to apologize to you? I can't even. I might cry because you cry sometimes. You laugh so you don't cry, and that's why you hear me laughing. Okay, on taxes and Governor Jay Inslee having this woman grovel before him in gratitude for getting just a little tiny bit of her money back when she can't afford to buy groceries, Dan says, I wouldn't mind paying high taxes if what we got are adequate government services and not making living conditions worse. And I agree, Dan, if we were living in the most wonderful state in the union with a fraction of the problems that we see right now, then yeah, I think there might be a little more willingness to pay the taxes that we're paying now at the level that we're paying them at right now. Dan, on me going on Fox despite vowing not to after I was burned the first time, glad 5599 is getting more visibility at the national level. However, I'm worried the issues will be dismissed as another right-wing talking point than actually caring about parental rights. And that is the effort, to dismiss them as a right-wing talking point. And if you dare push back against 5599, then you hate trans people and you want trans kids to kill themselves. That's what they do. It's like their little poison pill to say, oh, we don't want reasonable people to push back against this because reasonable people don't want to be painted as right wing and they don't want to be painted as anti-trans. So they just shut up. And the key is not to shut up and not to let these little people who want to label you win over, because if you let them win, then that's how bills like 5599 get passed. Nicole's over there laughing. So I imagine that you have some good responses to the beehive situation.
Well, good or... You want to go there now?
No. I'll get to the renters issue first. Maybe it's.
I think it might make us feel kind of dumb, but we'll
see. Is it an obvious explanation?
It's very obvious.
Oh no! Okay.
And everybody knows but us, apparently.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, get to it. So on the rent, Chris says on Patreon, my lady works in property management in the greater Seattle area. The rules are insane, and the abuse of the system by tenants is almost as egregious as our reps in Olympia. Yeah, when someone can squat in your home and you don't have the right to just get them out immediately, I would say that that's pretty ridiculous. Matthew writes, I'm just so interested because Nicole's over there laughing at me. If you can cap large late fees at $10, landlords will make it up by increasing rent. These policies just chase away the mom and pop landlords, lowering the supply of rentals. Less supply, higher rents. Yes, Matthew, why aren't you on the Seattle City Council? Dan says, if late fees for renters are capped at $10, can late fees for property taxes be capped at $10 as well? Dan, you're a genius. Never want to do that, do they? They never want to give you a reprieve on your property taxes, do they? Interesting. Oh, no. Oh, no, wait. No, that's not the answer to the flag
thing. It really is.
Oh, gosh. No, when I Googled it. No, that's not true.
Yes.
No, that's not true.
What? Yes, it.
Google the Utah State flag.
Have you seen the Utah State flag?
Yeah, when I Googled
it. There's a beehive in the middle.
No, when I Googled it, it has, because I did this. Okay, let's just read the answers. Denise says Utah is the beehive state, so that's why it's there.
And I did look that up as well, and it is called the beehive state because the beehive symbolizes the Utah community as each person in Utah works together to support and help one another
Tazet says that's clearly the Utah state flag redone in rainbow colors. No,
so it's the rainbow or it's the Utah state flag supportive of LGBT, trans, blah, blah, blah.
No, when I look at, I Googled this. It's not as if I didn't Google Utah state flag.
There's two versions.
Yeah, what comes up for me is a bald eagle. Oh, let me just, I'm going to make
this zoom in
full screen and I'll turn it around. When I Googled, wow, now I do feel dumb, but no,
okay,
I don't.
Wait, go to, if now click images and you'll see multiple. Oh yeah, there's the beehive right there in the middle. How did you not? You had a long night.
Oh my god!
It's okay. But that's and I didn't preview this question. Okay. I just kind of went with it, so that was on me too. I'll take some of the blame.
I can't believe I did that. This still doesn't look like that flag, though. This doesn't. It has a bald eagle on it.
You're right.
This has a
shocking
bald eagle.
That they took that out.
This has American flags, a bald eagle. It says industry.
Yeah.
I guess my, as a good American, my eye went to the bald eagle.
Wow. Yes.
You know, is this a good time to say that we put a lot of effort into researching every single aspect of the show? And I owe like $3 to the snort jar now.
I wish. I didn't know that it was the beehive state.
Nicole, you're my producer. You're supposed to review every dumb idea that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you kind of are the Twitter realm representative. And I was like, well, maybe
people
it's
are
a
making
big Twitter
fun of me in the comments right now, thing. Aren't they? All right. Apparently, it's just an LGBTQ version, an altered version of the Utah flag. Mm-hmm. All right, it was fun anyway.
Yeah, it was fun. We should do more things like that, though.
But let's just double check it. Let's do like basic research first. Wow. Okay. Anyway,
Google image search.
I think I need this today more than anyone, but let's end with our daily dose of sanity. All right. Former President Donald Trump, do you recall when he did non-fungible tokens of himself? Of course you do, because who didn't hear about that? So he did these little like trading cards, like Donald Trump trading cards, but as non-fungible tokens, which I still fail to understand the point of them. But basically you own one of them, you can trade them, they can come up and down in value, apparently. So anyway, the former president announced today that he's doing take two of his trading cards. Listen.
My Trump digital trading cards are back with a bang. Series 2, the new collection, features incredible artwork of me as a rock star and also as a monster trucker. People love to collect baseball cards, but why settle for that when you can collect the greatest trading card in history?
Yeah. How much are they, Nicole? You looked this up earlier.
Well, they start at $99, and then I think they fluctuate, right? They're based on which ones are more popular, whatever. Anyway.
Well, apparently when he released the second round of NFTs, the first batch is now plummeting in value.
Right.
So like they're not as exclusive because there's another round of them.
Well, it's interesting. He says, oh, people love to trade baseball cards. Well, nobody does that anymore. I mean, there are people that have cards and keep cards. It's not as popular as it was 30, 40 years ago, right? So, but nice also, try. Pokemon, maybe. But nobody is trading $99 cards.
So here's my sanity check. This is for him to raise money. Now, if you're fine with that and you're like, I want to help him with his legal fees, cool. But let me give you a little sanity check, a workaround. Instead of paying $99.99 for these cards, let's say that you want the trading card that is Donald Trump dressed as Elvis. you know, he makes himself look very slim in these trading cards.
He looks very
in good
slim
shape.
In this.
Not even Elvis was slim. This must be a younger Elvis version of Donald Trump. Just do what I did. Take a screen grab of it and save it to your PC. And then you have a Donald Trump NFT trading card. Is that how that works?
No, you can't say you own it. So
yeah, I could send it. I could email it to someone and say, hey, you want to buy this off me?
I don't think
would they know
like
the difference?
That. I think so.
Do I not know? Just like I didn't know what the Utah State
right.
flag was.
Yeah,
is this an example of that?
Something.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. But
sometimes I like to play a dumb blonde on the podcast just to feed into the stereotype. It's insane to spend your money on this. Yeah. That is my like a mom telling you, please don't spend $99.99. That's 2 years of Undivided.
Or invest that.
Or invest it. Okay, you're right.
Well,
or invest that in something that's actually going to grow in value. Because as you saw here, if you bought one originally, yeah. the value of it has plummeted
really
because he's now released
it.
More.
I guess
really
you're taking the same risk.
But. It would be sane to really, truly invest the money in something that will pay off in the long run.
We have a sponsor coming up pretty soon, I think, that we'll be able to give you some better advice on what to do with your money.
Oh, a new sponsor. Good tease.
Yeah.
Good tease.
It's
okay.
Come and see
All right.
Me.
That has been your sanity check for today, although I'm the one who needs a sanity check. Didn't get enough sleep. Apparently, I can't simply Google the Utah flag and figure out what this was. It'll be fun for the people who are only listening to the podcast later. All right. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, except those last two segments. That's not really part of the mission. Just scrub those from your memory. All right. We'll see you guys back here at noon tomorrow. And don't forget, if you want to become a subscriber to Undivided for as little as $5 a month, you can get access to bonus content, including monthly live Q&As with yours truly, and a Sunday show where we take a deep dive into controversial issues. This Sunday, we're talking about Earth Day and how Earth Day used to be wholesome. I used to go just pick up trash as a kid. Now it's been weaponized to fit a political and social agenda, so that's the topic. So visit UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com, and there you can figure out how do you watch the show, how do you listen to the show, how can you contact us with your story ideas, tips, or your reactions to some of the segments that we do that just might not work out as intended. All right, we'll see you guys back here at noon, UndividedPod.com.